Welcome to Zichud Daf Siman Mem by Avram Goldar and Tirma Zechus Yavamas Daf Pei Hey, the ninth parak Yesh Mutaros. So the three daps we're going to focus on. Number one, Rabbi Elazar asked Rabbi Yochanan, if an almana married a kohen gadol or a grusha or chutz married a kohen hedyot, Yesh lahen mezonos or ein lahen mezonos, do they have the right to sustenance or not? The Gemara clarifies the question. If she's living with him, he's in a position where he must divorce her. How could she have the right to sustenance? The Mefarshim explained that receiving sustenance would encourage her to stay with him. Rather, the questions regarding when the husband went overseas and she borrowed money and used it to support herself. What is the halacha? On one hand, mezonos tanai ksuba nihnum. Sustenance is a tanai in the ksuba. So since she has the ksuba, she also has the right to mezonos. Or perhaps the ksuba itself, which is collected upon leaving the marriage, she can claim, whereas mezonos dima te'akim gabe leisle. Mezonos, which might cause her to stay with him, she does not have the right to claim. Rabbi Yochanan responded that she does not receive mezonos. A braisa that taught that she does was referring to after the husband's death. Rashi explains that now that she's an almana, there are no grounds to deprive her of her right to support, lest it encourage her to stay with him. Point number two is not a braisa, an almana to a kohen gadol, or a grusha or chalusa to a kohen hedyot. Yeshal ksuba peres mezonos below. She receives the ksuba, produce, sustenance, and worn out garments, referring to garments she brought into the marriage she may take with her when the marriage ends, whereas shnios receive none of them. The braisa brings three explanations with the distinction. Rabbi Shimon Elazar said the almana married to a kohen gadol has a ksuba, neshu pasul vehi pasul, because he's pasul since he cannot do the avoda, and she's pasul because she's now a chalala. Whenever they both become pasul, the rabban penalized him by requiring him to pay the ksuba. Rashi explains that his being prevented from doing the avoda will lead him to divorce her. Whereas in the case of the shnia, where they both remain kosher, they penalized her by depriving her of a ksuba. This will lead her to want a divorce in order to marry someone else. Rebbe says the distinction is that the case of the almana to a kohen gadol is a deraisa, v'divrei Torah ein tzrichin chizuk, and deraisa law does not require chizuk, whereas the drabban, like shnios, does require chizuk. And point number three, the braisa brought a third explanation, why the almana to a kohen gadol receives a ksuba, whereas the shnia does not. In the case of the almana to a kohen gadol, zehu margila is the man who persuades the woman to marry him. A woman would not want to enter a marriage which disqualifies her, her husband, and her children, and where her husband would be angry with her, that she caused a psul for him and his children. The Meir explains that it must have been the man who gave in to his physical desires who persuaded her to marry him. In the case of the Shnia, Zohi Margilaso, it's she that persuades the man to marry her. Since the marriage will not disqualify her, her husband, or her children, she has nothing to lose and therefore persuades him. Rashi later on explains that a woman wants to get married more than a man. The Gemara asks, whose opinion is this? And it answers that it's either Rabbi Shimon Elazar's providing a rationale for his position, or it's Rabbi who retracted his first explanation because a chalutza to a kohen is only a derabbanan, and yet she does receive her ksuba. So once again, the 3 points are number one. Rabbi Elazar asked Rabbi Yochanan, if an almana married a kohen gadol or a grusha chalutza married a kohen hedyot, yesh lahen mezonos or ein lahen mezonos, do they have the right to sustenance or not? The Gemara clarifies the question. If she's living with him, he's in a position where he must divorce her. How could she have the right to sustenance? The Mefarshim explained that receiving sustenance would encourage her to stay with him. Rather, the questions regarding when the husband went overseas and she borrowed money and used it to support herself. What is the halacha? On one hand, mezonos tanai ksuba nihnum. Sustenance is a tanai in the ksuba. So since she has the ksuba, she also has the right to mezonos. Or perhaps the ksuba itself, which is collected upon leaving the marriage, she can claim, whereas mezonos dima te'akim gabe leisle. Mezonos, which might cause her to stay with him, she does not have the right to claim. Rabbi Yochanan responded that she does not receive mezonos. A braisa that taught that she does was referring to after the husband's death. Rashi explains that now that she's an almana, there are no grounds to deprive her of her right to support, lest it encourage her to stay with him. Point number two, it's not a braisa, an almana to a kohen gadol, or a grusha or chalusa to a kohen hedyot. Yeshal ksuba peres mezonos below. She receives the ksuba, produce, sustenance, and worn out garments, referring to garments she brought into the marriage she may take with her when the marriage ends, whereas shnios receive none of them. The braisa brings three explanations with the distinction. Rabbi Shimon Elazar said the almana married to a kohen gadol has a ksuba, neshu pasul vehi pasul, because he's pasul since he cannot do the avoda, and she's pasul because she's now a chalala. Whenever they both become pasul, the rabban penalized him by requiring him to pay the ksuba. Rashi explains that his being prevented from doing the avoda will lead him to divorce her. Whereas in the case of the shnia, where they both remain kosher, they penalized her by depriving her of a ksuba. This will lead her to want a divorce in order to marry someone else. Rebbe says the distinction is that the case of the almana to a kohen gadol is a deraisa, v'divrei Torah ein tzrichin chizuk, and deraisa law does not require chizuk, whereas the drabban, like shnios, does require chizuk. And point number three, the braisa brought a third explanation, why the almana to a kohen gadol receives a ksuba, whereas the shnia does not. In the case of the almana to a kohen gadol, Zehu Margila is the man who persuades the woman to marry him. A woman would not want to enter a marriage which disqualifies her, her husband, and her children, and where her husband would be angry with her, that she caused a psul for him and his children. The Meir explains that it must have been the man who gave in to his physical desires who persuaded her to marry him. In the case of the Shnia, Zohi Margilaso, it's she that persuades the man to marry her. Since the marriage will not disqualify her, her husband, or her children, she has nothing to lose and therefore persuades him. Rashi later on explains that a woman wants to get married more than a man. The Gemara asks, whose opinion is this? And answers that it's either Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's providing a rationale for his position, or it's Rabbi who retracted his first explanation because a chalutza to a kohen is only a derabbanan, and yet she does receive her ksuba. All right, so now we go to Simmer Daf Pei Hei, and her standard simmon is associated with the peh, a mouth, and we use a dentist in the simmon. So dentist is the simmon, so here goes. The kohen gadol who was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, overheard a dentist tell his shnia wife that she was not going to receive her ksuba like her almana friend got from the kohen gadol, since she was the one who persuaded him to get married. Once again, in slow motion. The kohen gadol who was way overseas lecturing at a dental convention, dentist, that must be on daf pei hei, mouth. So the kohen gadol who was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, which reminds us, Rabbi Elazar asked Rabbi Yochanan if an almana married a kohen gadol or a grusha or a chalutza married a kohen hedyot, yesh lehem mazonos or ein lehem mazonos, do they have the right to sustenance or not when the husband went overseas and she borrowed money and used it to support herself? Rabbi Yochanan answered that while she can claim the ksuba itself, which is collected upon leaving the marriage, she cannot claim mazonos, which might cause her to stay with him. So the kohen gadol who was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, overheard a dentist tell his shnia wife that she was not going to receive her ksuba like her almana friend got from the kohen gadol, which reminds us it was taught in a brisa, an almana to a kohen gadol or a grusha or chalutza to a kohen hedyot, she receives her ksuba, peros, mazonos, and worn out garments, referring to garments that she brought into the marriage, she may take with her when the marriage ends, whereas shniyos receive none of them. The brisa brings three explanations for the distinction. Rebbe says the distinction is the case of the almana to a kohen gadol is a deraisa. V'divrei Torah ein tzrichin chizuk, and deraisa law does not require chizuk, whereas a derabban like shnios does require chizuk. So the kohen gadol was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, overheard a dentist tell a shnia wife that she was not going to receive her ksuba like her almana friend got from the kohen gadol, since she was the one who persuaded him to get married. Which reminds us, the brisa brought a third explanation why the almana to a kohen gadol receives a ksuba, whereas the shnia does not. In the case of the almana to a kohen gadol, zehu margila, it's the man who persuades a woman to marry him. A woman would not want to enter a marriage which disqualifies her, her husband, and her children, and where her husband would be angry with her, that she caused a psul for him and his children. In the case of the shnia, zohi margilaso, it's she that persuades the man to marry her. Since the marriage will not disqualify her, her husband, or her children, she has nothing to lose, and therefore persuades him. So once again, the kohen gadol who was away overseas lecturing at a dental convention when he got a call that his almana wife had taken out a loan to cover her mazonos, overheard a dentist tell a shnia wife that she was not going to receive her ksuba like her almana friend got from the kohen gadol, since she was the one who persuaded him to get married. All right, so now it's time for four blot back chazara. Daf payoff. So the simmer daf payoff is a grandpa. So here goes. Grandpa, grandpa, that must mean daf payoff. Grandpa Cohen, who watches androgynous grandson give his bas Yisrael wife truma, which reminds us that in the next mission states Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon say androgynous Cohen shenasa bas Yisrael machil b'truma, an androgynous Cohen who's married to a bas Yisrael entitles her to eat truma. The Gemara brings a malchuk as a rhyme. Rish Lakish said machil b'truma ve'ein machil b'chaz b'shok. He entitles her to eat truma, but not the breast and thigh of kachin kalim. But Rabbi Yochanan says, af machil b'chaz v'shok. He even tells her to eat the chaz v'shok. Reish Lakish holds that androgynous is a safek ish, and therefore is only permitted to truma, which is nowadays a derabanan. Rabbi Yochanan holds that an androgynous is a zachar v'adai, and therefore is even permitted to the deraisa, chaz v'shok. So, Grandpa Cohen, who watches androgynous grandson give his bas Yisrael wife truma, sat in his rocking chair munching figs from the mixture of round cakes of pressed truma and chulun figs, which reminds us, Reish Lakish learns from the case of a round cake of pressed figs of truma that got mixed with other round cakes of figs, it becomes batel. Rashi explains that if truma nowadays were a deraisa, it would not become batel, for items that are commonly counted when they are sold are considered a davar choshuv, something of significance, which the laws of bittel do not apply to. Rav Yochanan responded he wanted a braisa that a piece of tamei chatas meat that became mixed with slices of taro chatas meat does become batel, which demonstrates that the raisa prohibited foods that are commonly counted when sold are subject to bittel. Rather, it's only items that are exclusively counted that are deemed a davar chashuv and are not subject to bittel. So, Grandpa Cohen, who watches Androgynous grandson give his Bas Yisrael wife truma, sat in his rocking chair munching figs from the mixture of round cakes of pressed truma and chulun figs, and laughed about the time he mixed a piece of chatas tamei meat with 100 pieces of taur chatas meat. Which reminds me, Rabbi Yochanan's case was where a piece of chatas tamei meat got mixed with 100 pieces of taur chatas meat, and it became batel. We see from here that the tamei slice of meat, even though it's commonly counted when it's sold, becomes batel. This contradicts Reish Lakish's opinion that any item which is commonly counted is a davar chashuv and is not batel. Rabbi Chiya Breda Rav Huna defended Reish Lakish's ruling by explaining the case as b'nimucha, where the piece of tamei chatas meat dissolved. Therefore, it's no longer commonly counted and is subject to bittel. Daf pei base. So the simmer daf pei base is peanut butter. So here goes. The boy who got peanut butter. Peanut butter? That must be on daf pei base. The boy who got peanut butter all over two boxes of chulin and truma grain that fell into two similar boxes, which reminds us that more questions whether Ryokan really holds truma nowadays is a deraisa. Based on a braisa that taught that if two boxes of grain, chulin and truma, fell into two other boxes, one of chulin and one of truma, we can assume that the chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma. And Ryokan says this law applies even if the chulin grain in the chulin box was not more than the truma in the sock container. Now, if Rabbi Yochanan holds that truma nowadays is a deraisa, how can he not require rov to be mevatel? Rabbi Yochanan answers that the braisa is the rabban who hold that truma nowadays is only the rabban, and his earlier statement was in accordance with Rabbi Yossi, who says that nowadays truma is a deraisa. So the boy who got peanut butter all over two boxes of chulin and truma grain that fell into two similar boxes decided to use his empty peanut butter jar to add a saw of liquid to a mikveh and then remove a saw, which reminds us. The more asked if Rabbi Yochanan really holds that rov is not required to be mevatel of the rabban iser, for it was taught in the Mishnah if a mikveh contains exactly 40 saw of water, one put in a saw of other liquids and then removed a saw of the mixture, the mikveh is still valid, and it was said in the Rabbi Yochanan, this procedure of adding a saw of water and removing a saw may be repeated ad rubo, up until the majority of the mikveh. Doesn't this mean that the majority of the mikveh water remained? And since Mayim She'uvim, drawn water is only at the Rabbanim Psul for a mikveh, this implies the Rabbi Yochanan requires rov to be mevato ad Rabbanim Iser. The Gemara answers that what is meant is that we should not remove a majority of the mikveh water, but an equal amount of mikveh water is enough to be mevato the Rabbanim Psul. Alternatively, we could say that Rabbi Yochanan does require rov, but in the case of the boxes of grain and chulin, we may rely on the leaning assumption that the chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma. So the boy who got peanut butter all over two boxes of chulin and truma grain that fell into two similar boxes decided to use his empty peanut butter jar to add a saw of liquid to a mikveh and then remove a saw until he dropped and broken in fright when he saw an androgynous marry a woman. Which reminds us, on Daf Pei Alef Amud Aleph, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish argued whether Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon hold that androgynous is a definite male or a suffix male. The Gemara challenges Reish Lakish's opinion that he's a suffix male, for the Mishnah stated, androgynous nose, an androgynous marries a woman, which implies l'chadchila, and the Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon hold he's a definite male. The Gemara continues to challenge Rabbi Yochanan's position as well. Daf Pei Gimel, so the simmer Daf Pei Gimel is a pogo stick. So here goes. The farmer who uses pogo stick, that must be more on Daf Pei Gimel. The farmer who uses pogo stick to jump up and graft a branch on a tree 44 days before Shavuos, which reminds us, Gemara lists Mishnayos where Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon issued rulings together and the halacha goes according to them. One of them being in terms of archova, grafting. The one does not graft a branch on a tree 2 weeks before Shavuos, which is understood to mean 44 days before Shavuos, since the 30 days before Shavuos are already ushered to the halacha because of Tosafos Shavuos. So the farmer who uses pogo stick to jump up and graft a branch on a tree 44 days before Shavuos spotted a farmer spreading his vine over his tum-tum neighbor's grain. Which reminds us, Shmuel said the halachas of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon regarding kiddush, rendering produce unfit regarding klein. For it was taught in Mishnah and klein, Rabbi Meir says one who spreads his vine over the standing grain of his friend has rendered the grain unfit as klai kerim and is chai for its loss. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say, Ein adam osu davar she'en shalo. A person cannot render something prohibited unless it belongs to him. And Tosos explains that this principle only applies with prohibitions that require intent, such as klein. But in cases that do not require intent, such as one putting chalav or nevela in his friend's pot of meat, the food certainly becomes forbidden. So the farmer uses pogo stick to jump up and graft a branch on a tree 44 days before Shavuos spotted a farmer spreading his vine over his tumtum neighbor's grain, who was distracted while being informed he should not perform chalitza, which reminds us that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a tumtum whose genital covering was torn open and found to be a male should not perform chalitza because he's a seris vadai, a definite seris. Whereas his son, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda said that a tumtum is only a suffix seris. The nafkamina between them is to disqualify the yavama for yibum when there are other brothers and to perform chalitza when there are no other brothers. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that he's a seris vadai, his act of chalitza has no validity and she still may be taken in yibum by the other brothers, whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, it may have a validity if he's not a seris chama. If there are no other brothers, Rabbi Yehuda says she does not require chalitza from him, whereas according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, she does since he might not be a seris chama. Daf Pei Dalet, so the Simmer Daf Pei Dalet is a launch pad. So here goes. The Kohen had Yod astronaut getting married to the Almana on his launch pad. Launch pad? That must mean we're on Daf Pei Dalet. The Kohen had Yod astronaut getting married to an Almana on his launch pad, while his brother, the Kohen Gadol, stood by, which reminds us, the opening mission of the ninth parak presents four categories of women, the first category being those who are permitted to their husbands and prohibited to their yavams. The first case is, Kohen had Yod shenasas Almana v'yeshu l'ach Kohen Gadol, a Kohen had Yod who married an Almana and he has a brother who's a Kohen Gadol. The Gemara addresses why the Mishnah said he was married to a widow, when it could have said he did kedushin with her, and she would still be forbidden to the yavam, who is a Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen had Yod astronaut getting married to an Almana on his launch pad, while his brother, the Kohen Gadol, stood by, was interrupted by a basula, who climbed up and asked why he didn't marry her, which reminds us. The Gemara continues to challenge the first example of the Mishnah and asks why the first case is that of an Almana, least named basula. Let it state she was a basula who had never been married, since she will become an Almana when the Kohen had Yod dies. So the Kohen had Yod astronaut getting married to an Almana on his launch pad, while his brother, the Kohen Gadol, stood by, was interrupted by a basula who climbed up and asked why he didn't marry her. And he told her that as a Kohenah, she could marry the Challah working in the control tower. Which reminds us, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Lohuzru Kasheris Lihinas L'Psuan, eligible women, referring to the daughters of Kohanim, are not prohibited to be married to Psuim such as Chalolim. Rav Bar Yitzchak's challenge to Rav's ruling is rebuffed. All right, that concludes today's shiur. This is Rabbi Avram Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.